Hello, welcome to the Sleep to Healthy. I'm your instructor, Dennis Trumpy, and this is lesson number 3 of the Sleep to Healthy, How to Cure Insomnia class. This lesson is titled Insomnia and You. In the last lesson, we learned about sleep. This lesson, we will focus on insomnia, how you developed your insomnia, and some initial steps you can take to help with your sleep and make the method used in this course more effective. Now that I've covered the science of sleep, I can turn to insomnia. When discussing insomnia with your doctor, it's helpful to know the technical definition of insomnia, because you might be shocked at the gap between your definition and that of the doctor's. Clinically, insomnia is defined as 3 or more nights of poor sleep for 3 months or longer, with a significant impact on daily performance, such as excessive sleepiness, irritability, or the inability to function well at work. I'll repeat that. 3 months of 3 or more nights per week, along with a related daytime complaint. Most people would judge this to be pretty extreme for a definition of insomnia. In the course, I'm not going to stick too closely with the official definition. For me, if you're dissatisfied with your sleep, then you have insomnia and you will benefit by joining me in this course. But that being said, it can be counterproductive to over-focus on your insomnia. Sleeping poorly can be a normal response to life stressors. If you have an important deadline coming up and you find yourself having trouble sleeping, this is likely perfectly normal and not chronic insomnia. If you've been struggling with important relationships in your life and it seems to be interfering with your sleep, then you can relax knowing that your sleep will likely return to normal when these tensions resolve themselves and you probably don't have chronic insomnia. Still, single events can trigger long-term insomnia, as you may develop counterproductive habits or thoughts or lose confidence to sleep well. CBTI should help you get back on the right track. Technically, there are 2 types of insomnia. The first is having trouble getting to sleep, and the second is having trouble staying asleep, such as waking up and not being able to get back to sleep or waking up too early in the morning. Many things can cause insomnia, some controllable, some not so easy to control. You may be wondering how you ever developed insomnia in the first place. So let's talk about the predisposition, cause, and continue model of developing insomnia. The first factor is predisposition. Your brain might be genetically predisposed to light sleeping, where nighttime disturbances more easily disturb your sleep. You might be a highly sensitive person who responds to disturbing light events with stress or anxiety. We all have different sensitivities to taste, smell, touch, and emotions, and sleep is no different. You might be predisposed to having your sleep more easily disturbed. So that's the predisposition part. The second factor is cause. These are events that happen that disturb your sleep. It could be having a child or a traumatic event or a medical condition or the loss of someone you love or any other causes of insomnia that I will list in a minute. It's your job, by the way, outside of this course, to manage these causal factors as best you can. The purpose of this course is to help you to sleep the best you can given your life's situations. But it's your job to take care of any insomnia-causing conditions as best as you are able. An interesting thing happens at the cause step. When something happens that disrupts your sleep, it can trigger a new cause of insomnia. For instance, your original cause of losing sleep might be job stresses. Not sleeping well when job stresses are high is perfectly normal. But you likely responded to the original cause of sleeplessness with behaviors and beliefs that actually cause insomnia in and of themselves. For instance, you might have started extending your time in bed to cope with your sleepless nights. But as we will learn, this is a terrible coping skill when it comes to curing insomnia and actually causes it to continue. Even after the original job stress is long gone, you've carried forward these bad habits of long times in bed, which cause your insomnia to continue. This is the continue part of the predisposition, cause, and continue model of insomnia. This course will deal with your behaviors, beliefs, and emotions that cause your insomnia to continue. Michael Schwartz put it this way.
So what I think is important to know about insomnia, right off the bat, insomnia itself is actually fairly normal in the sense that if something stressful happens, your sleep is very likely to deteriorate, not for long term, but just temporarily, maybe a night or two or even three or four. That's considered a normal response, usually to the magnitude of some kind of disruption during the day, a stress of some kind, physical or mental. But chronic insomnia is different, and that's three or more times a week, 3 months or more, you know, those kind of the classic parts of the definition, ongoing kind of trouble falling asleep or getting back to sleep, waking up too early, these kinds of things. That is not normal. That's what we call chronic insomnia. What the main thing that drives that chronic insomnia or takes it from acute to kind of a chronic nature is that there's a bit of anxiety and apprehension and worry about sleep specifically that starts to build with each night of poor sleep. It's sleep-related anxiety, but it's really consequences of not sleeping anxiety. So people generally are anxious about how they're going to feel the next day more than simply the fact that they're not sleeping at that moment. Clearly, they do worry about that as well. They worry about the consequences of not sleeping as well, on their health, you know, on all kinds of things, including how they're going to feel the next day. So sleep-related anxiety is really a big, big driver or perpetuating factor when it comes to insomnia.
And Dr. Erickson had this to say.
One of the most important things, most important concepts to understand when you're trying to get past insomnia is sleep efforts. I think it's really important because few people, even in the sleep field, understand it and practice it and use it. So what is a sleep effort? Well, a sleep effort is anything you do to try to produce more sleep. For example, using a supplement like melatonin or using a meditation app or keeping it really, really cool and dark in your bedroom, etc. All those things are things you do to try to produce more sleep. They're called sleep efforts. Now, here's the thing. Sleep, just like our thoughts, our emotions, are uncontrollable. We cannot control them. And what happens is if I tell someone, try not to think of a pink elephant, guess what? They will think of a pink elephant. The opposite happens when we try to control thoughts, emotions, and sleep. For example, if somebody tries to take some melatonin, hoping that will produce more sleep, then what happens is the opposite. When they take that melatonin, that will lead to preoccupation and self-monitoring. They will be thinking, okay, let's see what happens. I took 5 milligrams. Am I going to sleep? Maybe I should take more. Maybe I should take less. That whole thought process that these sleep efforts lead to create more insomnia. So it's really important to understand that anything you do to try to produce sleep always will produce insomnia.
That is the great irony of insomnia. The harder we try to fight it, the more the insomnia monster grows. It's like cutting the leg off a starfish. Instead of harming the starfish, it grows a new one. And in addition, the leg cut off can grow into a new starfish. In this course, we're going to learn how to work with your natural sleep systems to cause your sleep starfish to disappear. Now let's look at the causes of insomnia. Remember, it's your job to identify your causes of insomnia and deal with them as effectively as you can. Listen to the list carefully and see if any of these apply to you. I put the causes into 5 categories: psychological, body, chemicals, environment, and unknown. So let's look at psychological factors first. So life stressors such as work or relationships or financial issues. or psychological issues such as depression, bipolar disorder, psychotic disorders, and anxiety disorders, or unhealthy or incorrect understanding of sleep and the resulting erroneous actions. This is what we will be tackling in the course. The second category is what I call human body factors. So, sleep apnea, where you frequently stop breathing during the night. By the way, if you feel very tired during the day but think you sleep well, you might have sleep apnea and should seek medical advice, as this can be a very serious sleep disorder. Medical conditions such as heart disease, heartburn, chronic pain such as arthritis, neurological conditions such as Parkinson's or hyperthyroidism. Also, you may have an undiagnosed medical condition. So that's why it's always important, if you want to tackle your insomnia, to start with a healthcare professional to make sure that there's nothing that you're missing in your medical history. Allergies, especially nasal allergies, can cause insomnia. Aging and its effects, or restless leg syndrome. The third category is chemical factors. So this could be some medications you're taking, or excess caffeine or nicotine, especially as it gets close to bedtime. The use of alcohol or other drugs. Long-term use of some sleeping pills. And also hormonal shifts like menopause. The fourth category, environmental factors. This can include shift work or environmental noise or disruptions during sleep, such as street noise or a snoring partner or having young children. And finally, the fifth category, unknown causes. Sometimes we're just not able to identify what causes the insomnia. Hopefully, as the medical science advances, all causes will someday be discovered. And this is not a complete list. Again, I encourage you to check out any other potential factors with your healthcare professional. An important message is that although you may suffer from some or any of these causes, you can still learn to sleep better. You may know of someone with a condition that would cause you to have insomnia, but they seem to still manage to sleep well, or at least much better than you would. This tells you that at least part of the insomnia is controllable and can be improved. Michael Schwartz gives some advice if the cause of your insomnia is medical.
It's helpful to understand that medications of different kinds will affect your sleep, and also sleep apnea will affect your sleep, and they can produce kind of insomnia types of experiences. And those two categories, medications and sleep apnea / loud snoring, both of those need to be brought up to the person's doctor. So that's really those are both medical issues that can produce insomnia types of experiences.
I'm going to emphasize one more time that it's important for you to tackle any issues that may be causing the insomnia to the degree that you're able. My own life serves an example of how the cause can be different from the continuing factor. I'm in my 60s now and semi-retired. The issues that started my insomnia, young children waking through the night, career worries, financial anxiety, they're all pretty much distant memories. But the insomnia continued long after those triggers disappeared. It wasn't until I focused on CBTI used in this course that my sleep issues were resolved and I was able to improve my sleep. It's up to you to deal with any underlying causes of insomnia the best you can. The focus of my course is give you the tools to get the best sleep you can given the constraints of your life. If the underlying problem is medical or psychological, then you should seek help from a qualified professional. Be sure to let them know that what you're doing to improve your sleep, such as this course, so we can work together as a team. If you're wondering whether your level of sleepiness is excessive or normal, you can take the Epworth Sleepiness Scale test. It asks you your likeliness of falling asleep during different situations, such as laying down on the couch in the afternoon, or watching TV, or being a passenger in a car, or stopping at the stoplight while you are driving. A link to the online tests is on my website, sleeptohealthy.com. If you want an accurate assessment of your sleepiness, you should consult an appropriate sleep specialist. As mentioned earlier, I cannot emphasize enough the importance of judging your sleep based on your experience, not trying to fit into some national average. So trying a test or two can be helpful. It also gives you a baseline that you can compare every few weeks to measure your progress as you complete this course. An easier sleepiness test is the Stanford Sleepiness Scale. It is considerably simpler and measures your level of sleepiness at a specific point in time during the day, not throughout the day. A score below 4 indicates that excessive sleepiness may be an issue. If you use this test, avoid evaluating yourself in the mid-afternoon when most of us experience a natural mid-afternoon slump and a feeling of sleepiness. Remember that feeling sleepy and having trouble focusing during the afternoon dip around 2 p.m. might be normal and not to be concerned about. Be careful not to confuse tiredness with sleepiness, as we often use the two terms interchangeably. Tired means that you are physically exhausted from excess exertion, such as after you've been on your feet all day working. Or tired could mean that you're kind of bored with life, or that life isn't going as you like it, so you feel despondent. Or you could feel mentally exhausted from working on a complex task for a long time. It's only when you show signs of falling or wanting to fall asleep that you are sleepy. They are two independent systems. That is why you might be tired from a long, hard day of work, but still unable to fall asleep. Some signs that you may be sleep-deprived include that it takes you a lot of willpower to get up in the morning. You need the snooze button or multiple alarms. You sometimes miss appointments or are late to work because of getting up late. It is difficult for you to socialize in the morning. You are sleepy during the day, showing physical signs like excessive yawning or dropping of the head or slow blinking or blank staring. You fall asleep before going to bed, such as sitting on the sofa watching TV. The earlier the nodding off, the worse the sleep deprivation. You fall asleep as soon as your head hits the pillow, especially if you dream right away. You need lots of naps during the day. A single, properly timed nap is fine. You sleep in on weekends. You're irritable or depressed. You need caffeine or energy drinks to stay awake, and you feel sleepy if you try to cut back. You can't concentrate or remember things, missing appointments, forgetting conversations. You make mistakes because your thinking is foggy. You become clumsy. It's hard to concentrate, and you feel rushed and unable to cope. You're losing interest in life, including things you used to find enjoyable. It's also important to know when CBTI might not work. Again, Mr. Schwartz.
CBTI, because it really does work in just about every case. And often in my experience, just anecdotally, whenever it kind of doesn't work, it's usually because maybe a patient is on a lot of medications for different things, and those medications are interacting with each other, and there's not much you can do behaviorally. Or the person has significant sleep apnea that needs to be treated. That's another person who probably won't, quote unquote, succeed with CBTI, because maybe their main problem is not classic conditioned insomnia.
In many cases, curing your insomnia will mean changes in lifestyle and sleep style. So don't be hesitant to seek some help, as change, even for the better, can be a difficult journey. It's usually best not to do it alone. Sleep coaches and specialists, either in person or online, are available to help you succeed. There is a lot of hype in the media about the horrible impact insomnia can have on your health. But as Dr. Erickson explains, this is more myth than fact.
Another thing that I think is really, really important as well to know about sleep is that no negative health consequences have been shown to be caused by short sleep and insomnia. And this is so important because a lot of people are having trouble sleeping because they fear that not sleeping enough will cause them to have Alzheimer's or cardiovascular disease or diabetes or other health issues. But when you look at the literature there, there's not a single study that shows a causality. There's nothing out there that proves that short sleep or insomnia causes any health issues. Sure, there are associations. Just as having ashtrays at home is associated with having COPD, short sleep and insomnia is associated with a whole range of health issues, but that doesn't prove that they're causing them. Just as having an ashtray does not cause you to have COPD, having short sleep and insomnia has never been shown to cause any health issues. In fact, when you look at observational studies that have included millions of people, those that have insomnia versus people that do not have insomnia have the exact same life expectancy and longevity. So it's really important to know that short sleep, insomnia can certainly make you feel terrible, but it has not been shown to cause any health problems.
We have to be careful to understand what Dr. Erickson said here. He's not saying that there are no long-term effects from having insomnia, but only that there are no known long-term health implications. Currently, we just don't know. So don't worry unnecessarily about your health risks that likely don't exist. You already have good enough reason to tackle your insomnia. You feel mediocre, you're impatient, and you don't function well. Those are good enough reasons to tackle your insomnia. You don't need a bunch of unproven health issues heaped on top of that. To avoid feeling rotten, irritated, and incompetent are good enough reasons, don't you think? I would like to mention another good reason to tackle your insomnia. Your insomnia likely affects not only you, but the people you interact with every day. Insomnia can impact your mood, your judgment, and your decisions. You may find yourself easily irritated and impatient. You may notice that you tend to view other people and life in general more negatively compared to when you sleep well. And you may find it hard to work through complex decisions, and all decisions involving other people are complex. By tackling your insomnia, you're improving the lives of the people you love and work with. You'll be making the world a better place. As you work through this course and find yourself getting bogged down or wanting to give up, persevere for others, even if you can't find the motivation to do it for yourself. I'd like to make a few more general comments about the course and insomnia. This course can help with your insomnia pretty much regardless of your situation. However, CBTI, or Cognitive Behavioral Therapy for Insomnia, that this course is based on, will be most successful if your condition or situation causing the insomnia is dealt with first. For instance, if you have sleep apnea, get that dealt with. Otherwise, CBTI will have limited impact on you. So I encourage you to talk to your healthcare provider about your insomnia to fully explore and correcting any underlying conditions, including ones that have not been mentioned here. Also, there are situational factors such as a snoring partner. You should try to correct this to the degree that is practical. Some of these will be dealt with in the lesson on sleep tips. Another point is that the methods of this course are drug-free. the methods can be used in conjunction with nearly all sleep aids, whether medical or herbal or routines or psychological. But you are ultimately responsible for deciding if your sleep crutch is a good fit for you, as I don't know anything about your specific situation. That said, the method encourages you to prudently wean yourself off any sleep aids you may be using as you gain mastery in your newfound sleep skills. Stopping medicines will require advice from your healthcare provider, as many medicines have adverse effects if they are discontinued incorrectly. A core belief of CBTI is that you can sleep well with minimal external sleep crutches. More will be said about this in a future lesson. And to be clear, when I talk about drug-free, I'm not talking about doing away with medicines or techniques or devices that are dealing with an insomnia-causing issue such as pain or sleep apnea. And one last point. You may be taking this course because you want to have a better and longer life. Focusing on your sleep is great. But from my research, the most potent single thing you can do to improve your life is to have a good exercise program. Getting regular exercise will not only help with your sleep, but also your longevity, your physical health, your mental health, your cognition, your mood, your relationship with others, and your self-esteem. So you have nothing to lose. It really is an elixir for a better life. But as always, check with your healthcare provider first. So if you are not already exercising, then I would start with that first, or at least at the same time as taking this course. Now you have a basic understanding of insomnia. We have covered a lot of information. It'll be helpful to review this lesson after you've listened to the other lessons, as it will make a lot more sense then, and you'll likely notice information that didn't seem important at the time and you forgot. Also, I might have made some improvements since this recording. Show notes are available at sleepthehealthy.com. The next lesson is titled
The Strange World of CBTI.
We will learn about the five elements of CBTI: compact sleep, sleep buddy, sleep myths, relaxation techniques, and sleep tips. Some of the methods are quite counterintuitive and would appear strange to someone who doesn't understand sleep and insomnia as you do.
When you're working with someone who's struggling or you're doing CBTI, you don't want to give up. You just got to kind of hang in there. And it really is as simple as that. The idea of spending less time in bed is very counterintuitive, but it's really the main driver of natural sleep is wakefulness.
This lesson, like the other lessons, comes with an assignment. You can find the assignments at sleepthehealthy.com. Today's assignment is to go through the list of insomnia causes and see if any apply to you. I've posted the list on sleepthehealthy.com, or you can re-listen to that part of the episode, which is around the 10-minute mark. Then brainstorm to see if you can find ways of mitigating the cause of your insomnia. Maybe it means you stop procrastinating and finally make that trip to the family doctor. Or perhaps it's time you talked to your snoring partner about how it disrupts your sleep.
This is important.
If you or your partner have a snoring issue, it could be a warning sign that you or they suffer from obstructive sleep apnea, a serious medical condition that needs to be looked at. The sleep journal that you started in lesson number one can help identify the cause and effect relationship of what is the root of your insomnia. If you can make some progress on tackling the source of your insomnia, then you will stand a much better chance of reaping the full benefits of this course. I hope it's obvious, but this podcast is not a substitute for advice from a qualified healthcare professional. The sole purpose of this podcast is to educate and entertain. As we do not know your particulars, we cannot possibly provide professional or medical advice. Your use of the information in this podcast is at your own risk. By structuring this as a course on curing insomnia, it keeps you focused on the core skills that you need to improve your sleep. You don't need tons of sleep trivia and people's opinions about sleep. You just need to know proven instructions on what you can do today to sleep better tonight so you can feel and function better tomorrow. This also allows you to repeat lessons, as it's hard to absorb all the information the first time through, and the information will make more sense after you've had the context of the whole course. You, like most people, will likely benefit from repeated listening. The lessons will be updated based on student feedback, so the next time you listen to the same lesson, it may be improved since the last time. And that's about it. Thanks for joining me in my sleep class. I look forward to seeing you again on the next episode of the Sleep to Healthy podcast. See you then.